Welcome to Parenting Matters on Nashville Catholic Radio, WBOU 100.5 FM, sponsored by the Family Life Office of the Diocese of Nashville. Your host for the program is Dr. Parr Donahue. Dr. Parr has years of experience in pediatrics and parenting. He was named the Senior Pediatrician of the Year by the Tennessee Chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics in 2014. Dr. Parr is the author of four books, including books on parenting entitled Messengers in Denim, The Amazing Things Parents Can Learn from Teens, and Tools for Effective Parenting. Visit Dr. Parr's blog at www.parentingwithdrparr.com. Here's your host, Dr. Parr Donahue.
Welcome to Parenting Matters on WBOU 100.5 FM and streaming throughout the world at WBOU.org. Our subject today, the essence of parenting. Our guest is Dr. Paul Stumm. I'll introduce him in a moment, but first my monologue. I read a review by Eric Bess of a painting done in 1850. James Spann's painting called Courage, Anxiety, and Despair, Watching the Battle, portrays three young women hiding behind a large rock, watching a battle which is out of sight of the viewer. The woman in front, Courage, has a large dagger in her right hand and is holding the other woman back with her left. Immediately behind her is Anxiety, a woman with tears in her eyes, clutching her throat. And the third woman, Despair, has her eyes closed, avoiding the battle. In his review, Bess writes, "Of course, battles are not always fought against human foes. At times, we can become enslaved to other things, such as money, drugs, and sex. And then we must fight a battle against an addiction to overcome and free ourselves from it. Anxiety and despair," he says, "are manifestations that obscure our addiction and cause us to succumb to them. Despair would rather close its eyes to the struggle of battling addiction, and anxiety, fearfully refusing to fight for freedom from them, is fine remaining enslaved to them. Despite appearing uninterested in freedom, and she accepts defeat. Anxiety sits in the shadows because she is afraid. She is afraid of what the battle might mean for her. Courage, however, leans forward towards the dagger. She is not afraid of the battle. She is more concerned with freedom." End quote. Here we see three women looking at the same battle and reacting differently. So it is with parenting. Some parents, like Courage, find the battle important enough to fight for. Others are so afraid of doing the wrong thing, they're frozen in place, afraid to take a stand or fight to teach their children right from wrong. And finally, there are parents who deny there is a problem and refuse to see it until it conquers them and their kids. The whole family is enslaved, as is the community, by unruly and undisciplined kids. We parents need to ask ourselves, what kind of a parent am I? And make the changes we need to become more courageous. As I was thinking about the painting and Courage, I read an op-ed in the Tennessean about the essence of leadership. In it, the writer recalled 13 quotes from leadership books, which he believes are, quote, the most significant, robust, and currently relevant tenets of leadership today. Because parenting is really leading, I felt these quotes were as germane to parenting as they are to leadership. The author of that article, Dr. Paul Stubb, is today's guest. He is a native of Nashville, Tennessee, and was named president of Cumberland University on August 26, 2015. He has served Cumberland University since 2003, first as an adjunct professor, then as dean of the Labry School of Science, Technology, and Business. And now, President Stubb holds a bachelor's from Auburn University and a master's from the University of Tennessee in Knoxville, a master's in education from Cumberland University, and he earned his PhD in engineering at the University of Tennessee from Knoxville. He is a graduate of the Navy War College Strategy and Policy course and retired from the U.S. Navy Reserves with the rank of commander. Prior to joining Cumberland University, Dr. Stumm enjoyed successful careers in the business sector, having worked as an executive for Georgia Pacific Corporation, Lockheed Martin, and Union Carbide Corporation. He sits on several boards in the community, including Vanderbilt, Wilson County Hospital, and is on the Lebanon Airport Commission. He is widely engaged in the Middle Tennessee community and provides consultative services for local and regional manufacturers, municipalities, and nonprofit organizations. His other accomplishments would fill the whole show, so I'll stop here. Dr. Stum is married to Dr. Christy Stum, a Cumberland University alum and former faculty member who now owns and operates Stum Healthcare Professionals, a primary care clinic in Carthage, Tennessee. Together, they have four children and six grandchildren. They worship at Limited First United Methodist Church. Welcome, Dr. Stum, to Parenting Matters on WBOU 100.5 FM and streaming throughout the world at WBOU.org.
Thank you, Dr. Donahue. It's my privilege to be with you today as your guest.
It's my pleasure to have you. I know our listeners will enjoy you too. Thank you so much. You have been a very successful career in the Navy, in business, in higher education, and together with your wife, Christy, have raised four children. Because your successes were dependent on your leadership, I want to discuss those 13 leadership quotes with you as they relate to parenting. But before we do that, I want to know a bit about Cumberland University. I know it is a private school, but what is its history? Is it or was it ever a religious school?
It was, in fact. Cumberland was founded in 1842, almost 180 years ago, by the Cumberland Presbyterian Church. And we operated with sponsorship and support of the Cumberland Presbyterian Church for our first 100 plus years. Then in 1946, the university board voted to transfer ownership and sponsorship to the Tennessee Baptist Convention. After about a decade, however, the Baptists wanted to move the university from Lebanon, Tennessee, into downtown Nashville. When the board was unwilling to make that move, the Baptists pulled out and started Belmont University in Nashville. Since that time in the early 1960s, Cumberland has been an independent, non-church-affiliated university.
Well, tell me, you still provide your students some spiritual help, do you not?
We do. Although we're no longer a church-sponsored school per se, our athletic director says we still smell like a faith-based institution. We care a lot about the spiritual development of our students, and it's still a very important priority for us and is, in fact, specifically stipulated in our university mission statement. Our focus on spiritual development is manifest in many ways, but is largely led by our university chaplain, Dr. Mike Ribsky. Mike is a former United Methodist minister. In fact, Mike was my pastor at Lebanon First United Methodist when the bishop decided it was time for Mike to move, as they do often in the Methodist Church. I persuaded Mike to stay and work with us at Cumberland University as our chaplain. One of the things that Mike does is that he publishes a weekly epistle, which he calls Pastor Mike's Monday Musings. It comes out early every Monday morning. And in those musings, he shares a lot of questions and thoughts to prod us to think about what's important spiritually. He also holds a series of weekly chapel chats in which he leads discussions with students, faculty, and staff on a wide variety of topics, all intended to help us with our collective spiritual growth.
You know, it sounds to me, Paul, that it would be helpful for anybody to get on his mailing list for the musings. Is it possible to do that?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, he distributes his Monday musings to a large array of people beyond just the campus community. And if you're interested in that, please feel free to email me or him directly at Cumberland University, and he'd be glad to add you to the weekly list.
Good. I'll ask you to do that right after the show. Thank you.
Sure.
And thank you, too, Paul, for meeting the religious needs of your students. It sounds like the parents of Cumberland students can relax when they turn their sons and daughters over to you. Now, you have a master's in education and have raised four children, so I'm going to consider you an expert in parenting. Is that fair?
You know, I love that question because I would say that some, and probably you, are truthfully an expert in parenting, but I wouldn't hold myself up as an expert in anything, much less parenting. I will say, however, that helping to raise grandchildren is a lot more fun than it was raising children. My wife and I are so blessed to have our six grandchildren who live right here just down the road from us, and we enjoy them a lot more than we ever did raising children.
Well, I hear so many parents say that, so many grandparents say that, and I have a little question about that because Mary and I just absolutely love taking care of our kids. We thought it was the greatest thing, but we moved to Nashville because we had 10 grandkids in Nashville, actually in Brentwood, and we have four other ones in Dayton, Ohio. So we have plenty of them around, and they're amazing, all the different things they're into now. And the youngest one is 18. I think he turned 19 in February. Wow. They're great, great kids.
That's impressive. How old's your oldest grandchild?
We have two that are 30. One was 30 in December, and the other one was 30 in January there.
Wow, that's impressive. I know nobody on this audio broadcast can see how you, but you look way too young to have grandkids that old. That's impressive.
Well, I was buried in first grade. The reason I mentioned the Sans painting is that I want to start with your quote, if you have the choice between attitude and ability, always choose attitude. Parents don't have that choice, or do they? Can parents nip a poor attitude in the bud? What can they do to help kids have a positive attitude?
Well, I want to begin by reflecting on the eulogy that Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher offered for our former President Ronald Reagan. In that eulogy, she said, "We all have one advantage that my friend Ronald Reagan never had. We have the example of Ronald Reagan." And in fact, in one of your recent episodes on this show entitled Parents as Teachers, you interviewed, I think you said it was your neighbor, a mom named Joe Franklin. And at the beginning of that session, you spoke in your monologue, and then you and she talked about the fact that children are always watching what we as parents and adults do. And I agree with your supposition in that discussion that, like most things in life, the best thing that a parent or a grandparent can do to influence children, or to really to influence anyone, is to set a good example. In their work entitled The Leadership Challenge, authors Kuzes and Posner posited this well when they talked about modeling the way. I'm certain I don't always do that very well, but it's certainly what I aspire to do.
Well, we all have the same problem. We want to be the best we can be, but sometimes we fail. And I think that actually, I'd like to tell parents, if you fail at something, that doesn't mean you did it wrong. That means you're teaching a lesson on how to adapt to failure. And so kids need to know that you made a mistake. You did something you shouldn't have. And then how do you act? So I think that that's also a learning experience for you and for your kids.
Great point. I agree.
Well, as you know, my parenting mantra is be the person you want your kids to become.
Right.
Now, columnist Jeff Minnick says, for the sake of their kids, we must endow them as parents with hope rather than despair, with love rather than hatred, and with faith rather than bitter cynicism. How did we do that?
Wow. I think that admonition is a good one and simultaneously a particularly difficult one today. It seems that the world is replete with hatred and vitriol, and the rancor is exacerbated by social media. I'm reminded of another of my favorite quotes, this one by Anne Lamott. And Anne Lamott purportedly said, "You know that you've created God in your own image when he hates all the same people that you do."
Isn't that true? That's so scary.
Yeah.
Well, that's one way of looking at it. But in the end, your kids will become you. They'll hate what you hate. They'll love what you love.
Exactly right. And really, the same thing is true, I believe, on a college campus. College students watch their faculty. They watch the administrators. They watch the staff. And they follow that lead.
How many kids have you seen come into the university and you'd say, that guy is not going to make it. He got such bad attitude. But to go out as leaders.
Yeah.
Because of you and your faculty.
Well, I wouldn't say because of me, but because of our incredible faculty. It happens over and over again. That we transform lives here at the university. And it's really a very rewarding experience for just that reason.
Has to be. In the end, I forgot who said this, where I read this quote, but it says, don't worry that your kids hear everything you say. Worry because they see everything you do.
Yeah.
Now, in your column, you had a quote from Admiral
Arleigh Burke. Admiral Arleigh Burke.
Yep. The hair.
In fact, we have an Arleigh Burke class destroyer in the Navy now.
Oh, really? Good. Right. Well, he said the heart of leadership is communication, and the heart of communication is listening. Your speech and language department spend time on this speaking part. But what can a parent do? Many of my parents would say, my kids won't talk to me anymore. They just grunt. Can that be fixed?
You know, Dr. Parr, I would say this may be a great example of do as I say and not as I do, just like we were talking about a minute ago. For I'm sure my children will tell you that I was not and am not always the best listener. And to be sure, communicating, particularly with teenagers, can be especially challenging when they just want to grunt at you, as you suggest in your question. But my experience is that most kids do eventually mature and come around. There's an old expression that I've always liked that says there are three phases to a dad's life. And these are, number one, my dad can whoop yours. Number two, dad, you don't know nothing. And phase number three, dad used to say.
I like that. I like that. I guess the problem is that it's hard for dads, especially. I don't know about women, I've never been a woman, but dads have a hard time adjusting to that second phase. It's not the kids that can't adjust to becoming adults. It's the parents can't adjust to their kids becoming adults. So I think that you have to go along with that. Because you can say, yeah, I don't know everything. I hardly know nothing.
You just have to live through it, I think. You have to live through it, and they'll come out of it once they get out of adolescence, most of them.
Yeah. One of the other quotes I especially like is, if you can't change the people, you need to change the people. I thought at first I would have to throw this one out because you can't throw out your kids. You can't get to be fixed.
Well, I admit that this admonition does work much better in the workplace than it does with family members, because we don't really get to choose most of our family members. But I view this as somewhat akin to God's relationship with each one of us. He probably should have abandoned and thrown me out a long time ago, but he hasn't. And I believe that God calls each one of us to love and forgive not just our children, but all of our neighbors, including our children, our siblings, and other family members.
I think you're right. And when we do that as parents, the kids will come around and start doing that themselves. And if I hear you right, if we forgive others, our kids will learn to forgive. I loved your grandmother Mamie's quote, not because my grandmother Mary was also called Mamie, but because it makes so much sense. There are four things a leader can do with his hands. He or she can clench them in anger, wring them in despair, fold them in idleness, or extend them to help others. Is there a way to teach this? I thought that Mr. Sam, in his painting, did that quite well, and that's why I included it. But how did your grandma Mamie do it?
You know, my grandmother Mamie, whose real name, by the way, was Mary, like yours, lived to be 101 years old. She lived through two world wars, the Spanish flu epidemic or pandemic, and numerous personal tragedies, including the loss of two husbands, and she outlived two of her five children. In fact, I'll never forget when Mamie, who her first husband died well before I was ever born. In fact, my mother was only 4 years old when her father passed away. But my grandmother remarried, and her second husband, whom I knew as my grandfather my whole life, we called him Big Albert. He also lived a long life. But I'll never forget when my grandmother was about 96 and my grandfather was at the end of his life. And it was Christmas morning, and she was so afraid that he was going to die on Christmas Day. And she said, God, please don't let me lose another one on Christmas Day. Because her first husband, my actual biological grandfather, had died on Christmas Day when my mom was 4 years old. But my grandmother, Mamie, was truly the model of selflessness her whole life. She was always willing to extend her hands to help others. Her daughter, my mother, is also that way, perhaps even more so than my grandmother. And I continue to learn from the example of my mother, who will be 87 years old this year. Her whole life has been about helping others, and she still does that every single day.
So it sounds to me that you are becoming your parents and your grandparent, just like the rest of the kids.
I would sure like to think so. I take that as a great compliment if anyone would ever accuse me of that.
Yeah, well, I tend it that way. So it did tell us about the quote, A players hire A players, B players hire C players. And I understand that, but how can we use that in parenting?
Well, the essence of this one is don't be afraid to hire people who are smarter and better than you are. Some people feel threatened by others who are smarter and for that reason are reluctant to hire them. But the most successful leaders are always those who are not afraid to hire smarter and more capable people. And I think this applies to parenting just as well as it does to the workplace. For the most successful parents are those whose children do more and achieve more than they have themselves.
You know, it always reminds me all four of my kids have their PhDs, and two are also physicians. And when my first son got his PhD and MD, one of my friends said, well, how does it feel to have your kids smarter than you are? I said, holy cow, I've been used to that for the past 25 years. I mean, ever since they were born, they were smarter than I ever was at that particular age. And I think that we have to appreciate that in our kids, because if we can appreciate that they are, at every stage in their life, they are smarter than we were at that stage. I mean, I think they are.
You know, Dr. Parr, that says a lot about your children, but it also says so much about you and your wife and your parenting and the way you raised those kids. And you won't want to brag about that, but I'd be awfully proud of that. And I commend you for that.
I credit my wife a lot for that, because she didn't push, but we just expected that they would do well.
Yeah.
And we talk about it. I remember when my oldest son just finished eighth grade, and I came home from work one day, and he was sitting in my study reading the daily paper. And he said, can I cut out this article? I said, sure. What is it? Well, it's a review of the talk that the guy gave at the University of Madison graduation. And he said, there are some points that I want to have in my baccalaureate speech when I...
Wow.
At the valedictorian.
And he did that as an eighth grader.
And you know what?
Did he actually use that later? Oh, that's fantastic. What a great story.
It's the idea that he set the goal.
Yeah.
He set the goal himself, and then he lived up to it.
That's magnificent.
We talk about forgiveness, and it reminds me in the Lord's Prayer, where we say, forgive us our trespasses. You say debts, but it's the same.
No, we say trespasses in the Methodist church, too.
Okay. Either way, it's the same. And one of your quotes from Ralph Waldo Emerson, one of my favorite poets, says, don't go where the path may lead. Go instead where there is no path and leave a trail. How does that work?
You know, Ralph Waldo Emerson, who preferred to be called Waldo, was a staunch abolitionist and a transcendentalist who loved and studied nature. So his quote about making a path and leaving a trail is, I think, particularly apropos. His own upbringing was somewhat unusual because his father, like my mother's father, died when he was a young boy, and he was raised primarily by his mother and one of his aunts. He did, however, marry twice. His first wife died of pneumonia at age 20, before they had even celebrated their second anniversary. But he fathered and raised four children with his second wife and was thus able to enjoy the experience of parenting, and purportedly was actually a very good father. Actually, Waldo was a much better father than I think he was a husband.
Really?
According to history.
I spent my youth on a farm, and I really appreciate your quote, your job as a leader is not to lead the horse to water, nor is it to make him drink. Your job as a leader is to make the horse thirsty. How does the parent make the kids thirsty, and what should we make them thirsty for?
Well, my wife grew up on a farm. I did not. I grew up in suburban Nashville. But my wife frequently educates me on the vernacular and the ways of rural life. As an educator and as a parent, I think one of the most important things that we can do is to encourage an inquisitive spirit, much like you apparently did for your children, i.e., we need to make our children thirst for knowledge. Ultimately, education is transformative for both individuals and for their progeny. And I'm absolutely convinced that we can and do, either intentionally or unintentionally, impact our children's thirst for knowledge and learning, just like you were describing what you did for your son when he was an eighth grader.
Yeah, I think you're right. You have to have a respect for the things you want your kids to have respect for, education, learning. You have to be a sponge for learning, and they'll see that sponge. Now, you talk about humility. That's a poorly defined virtue, but your quote from C.S. Lewis hits it straight on the head. True humility is not thinking less of yourself. It is thinking of yourself less.
You know, I worked with a man years ago who had a sign on his desk that read, quote, it's hard to be humble when you're as great as I am, unquote.
It's a great poem, too. It means song. Remember the song?
No, I don't remember this.
Oh, it's great. Hard to be humble when you're perfect in every way.
Oh, yeah. I do recall that song. You're right. I had forgotten that. I don't know why I didn't think, but you're exactly right. We ought to sing that together, but maybe not. Spare your listening audience that.
You're right.
But, you know, whether people actually have that sign on display, we all know people who act as if that were the case. And my dad's favorite Bible verse is Micah 6:8. And I try to remember that one that says, do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with our God.
It's like you say in Margaret Thatcher's quote, being powerful is like being a lady. If you got to tell somebody you are, you aren't. Did Margaret Thatcher really say that? And how does that apply to parenting?
Well, first off, I need to acknowledge and recognize that I was raised in a very special family, and in many ways, a very privileged environment that not everyone enjoys. We weren't rich, but I had two parents and four grandparents who loved me, a warm home with plenty of food and a good education. In my home, it was just an unwritten rule that you did what your parents asked you to do and you didn't talk back. My parents never had to tell me that they were in charge or had the power. My siblings and I just knew it. To me, Margaret Thatcher's statement, which, by the way, I believe she actually did say, absolutely does apply to parenting as well as to many other aspects of life.
Well, we are about out of time. Unbelievably, it's went so fast today, but we still have more quotes we didn't discuss. Well, what I would like to do, Dr. Staub, is put them on my my blog. They won't be on my Parenting-Matters blog. They'll be on my Parenting with Dr. Parr blog. And I'll just put them on there with your permission.
Absolutely.
Thank you once again, Dr. Staub, for spending your time with us today, and a special thanks to our listeners. Without you, we wouldn't exist. You are listening to Parenting Matters on WBOU 100.5 FM and streaming on WBOU.org. Before I sign off, one quick story. A man and his son were hiking in the mountains when they came across a large rock, which somehow had rolled onto the trail and forced hikers to walk around it. The boy looked at the rock and asked his dad, "Do you think if I tried really hard and used all my strength, I can move this rock?" Dad thought for a moment, looked at the rock, looked at his son, he said, "I think you can. I think you can move this rock." The boy walked over to the rock, put both his hands on it, and began to push. Nothing happened. He tried again, this time from the other side of the rock. He pushed, he grunted, he threw his shoulder into it. Nothing moved. Finally, he walked slowly to the uphill side of the rock, put his other shoulder and both hands on the rock. Nothing. He turned around and put his back against the rock and stretched his legs out to a nearby tree, and he pushed until his tummy was sore and his back was scuffed. His face was red and he was drenched with sweat. Then he gave up and fell on the floor. "Look," at his dad, and he said tearfully, "Dad, you said I could do this." "But I can't." Dad replied, "You said you were going to use all your strength." The boy said, "I did. I have nothing left." "No," Dad answered, "you have only used the strength of your body. You didn't ask me to help." Then he added, "Sometimes your greatest strength is the people with whom you are working." Now for your homework, get your spouse and family together and listen to this show, and then go to www.parenting-matters.com and tell us about your discussion. And if you want to read Dr. Staub's op-ed, go to www.parentingwithdrparr.com and listen. And if there's a topic you would like to hear discussed on Parenting Matters, let us know. We'll find an expert to tell us all about it. Thank you for listening, and may God continue to bless you and your family.
Thank you for listening to another edition of Parenting Matters with Dr. Parr Donahue. Parenting Matters is produced and recorded inside the studios at the Catholic Pastoral Center. Thanks again for listening to WBOU 100.5 FM and streaming at WBOU.org.